You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 455 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we're coming to you in different locations this week. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
It's the Steve Scheffler episode.
Hello! Wow, I love it! I was thinking Frank Clark, but Steve Scheffler, that is good. That is a good one.
That is much better, without question.
Big Ten Player of the Year. Steve Scheffler to you. Thank you.
We had no idea in 1993 that we were deep in the throes of Big Ten country here in Seattle, Washington. Imagine telling us in the 1990s that the Huskies were going to be part of the Big Ten.
I mean, I don't even know if I would have really grasped what that meant in the 1990s, but yes.
I mean, I hope by the end of the 1990s, you were conscious sure. enough of conference okay. affiliations to understand that.
Kind but of.
The we were still wrapping our mind. Though. We were still wrapping our mind around the idea of Penn State being in there and the little that was hidden inside the zero of the Big Ten to reflect that they were actually 11. You
Wait,
don't know about
actually,
this?
How long is that still?
I don't know if they still have a one because maybe they do because they do the B1G, but that's their logo now. So I don't
Big
think
Ten hidden 11. Hold on.
Yeah. This is a thing.
Blew my mind. So the
wow, you didn't know this?
But what makes it 11?
Oh, okay. It was not. It was hidden on the sides of the 10. Back in the day, is how where they put the 11. Are you seeing this on Google yet? Do I need to continue filling while you search for this?
It really came up rather quickly. That is the old school. I searched something else. Yeah, no, that was I think they might have overthought that one, actually. They might have been too clever in that one.
Well, back in the day, like...
Might I propose some rebounding L's?
Back in the day, hiding something in the logo or where it, like, all spelled out something was just, like, the coolest thing imaginable. Like, when you found out that the Montreal Expos had the ELB in their logo. But
it's
like,
messed up. Isn't
every...
that just the Expos logo, though?
What do you mean? What do you mean it's just the Expos logo?
Well, like, I guess it's an M also, and then it's the ELB.
Yeah. But now that's every single athlete's logo is, like, their initials curved into something related to them. So it is so overdone. It is one of those things that is, like, you could not transport yourself back to the 90s and understand how cool it was to find that out.
Yeah. Fabulous Peltoncast, we got no secrets. We're right there.
There's nothing hidden in our logo, alas.
The secret is that sometimes it's not fabulous.
Oh no, that's not a secret either. I think that's that's readily apparent as soon as you tune in. As soon as you
All right,
listen
I'm
to
turn
the roundup.
I haven't listened to the roundup, so
Oh, exactly.
Being at the Sounders game, maybe we'll come back to this later, and just discovering players who are on the team, and I'm like, I'm sure I have heard that this player existed.
So many times you have heard about Paul Areola and Jesus Ferreira, and yet.
They're new to me.
NBC Summer. All right, let's start with our toast this week, in exclusively UW edition of the toast. Congratulations to UW's sister duo, of Amanda Mall and Hannah Mall, who finished first and second in the pole vault in the Big Ten Indoor Championships, with Amanda resetting her NCAA record that we toasted to last week, and Hannah also surpassing the non-Mall NCAA record, the two greatest pole vaults in the history of NCAA women's competition, are both recorded by twin sisters at UW.
Wow! That is incredible.
So this is like wild stuff. The Seattle Times, I think this was the Seattle Times had a column last week about Amanda Mall, who like went through a period where she basically had the yips and couldn't successfully pole vault. And overcame that to set this NCAA record. Very exciting stuff.
Wow.
So
just like, I can't pole vault. Sorry. I couldn't pole vault without the yips.
It's true. It's all true.
So UW, you know, the Pac-10, remember that? Pac-12 used to be the conference of champions.
That's correct.
The Big Ten, many champions in the Big Ten, but the most champions are right here in Seattle, Washington. It didn't need to be the conference of champions at all of the Pac-10, Pac-12. It's just the University of Washington because we dominate everything. We are literally in the national championship game in football 2 years ago to another Big Ten team. But all of the national championships are right here in Seattle because we dominate track and field, land and sea here at the University of Washington.
I mean, I guess when you count crew, yeah.
Yes.
You can say that. Is a reminder in, I believe it was the Honda Trophy for overall sport excellence. UW never ranked that highly. It was Stanford and USC always that carried the old conference of champions and were the main reasons it had the most.
We don't need to be reminding things.
Although USC is here with us in the Big Ten. So this was, of course, a Big Ten championship, not yet a national championship. That's coming up in 2 weeks. UW's Scott Toney also won
She has the NCAA record.
Correct.
I'm not that worried about the people from Butler. Like,
I love the idea that Butler is a field giant. Butler has 23 national championships in the pole vault. Who knew? UW's Scott Toney also won the men's pole vault. So Hello. They had both men's and women's.
I've been saying this for a long time. We're a pole vault school.
Yeah. Husky runners won 4 championships.
Oh, conference of champions, school of champions.
Chloe Forster in the women's 800, Nathan Green in the men's 3000.
You're like, I'm really just trying to get through this.
Amina Matog in the women's 3000, as well as the men in the distance medley relay, which is something that the UW website very casually refers to as DMR. And I was like, I have no idea what this is, guys.
That's how much of a track and field school we are.
Yeah,
we
they just assume
abbreviate
they know.
Our championships.
All right, well, staying again with UW, congrats to softball's Alexis DeBoer and Stevie Hansen named the Big Ten hitter and pitcher of the week, respectively, for their performance in the Outrigger Invitational. Alexis DeBoer hit .579 with 3 home runs and 11 RBI, including her first career Grand Slam. While Hansen threw 12 and two-thirds shutout innings while earning 2 wins and a save over the weekend.
Wow. Do you think that her dad will follow her back here once he's fired as maybe offensive coordinator to Jed Fish?
I don't know. He Jed probably Fish doesn't have cold plays.
He doesn't have NFL experience also, so
yeah.
Probably not. Probably couldn't get the job.
I mean, look, now that he's reunited with Ryan Grubb, it's going to be a totally different season. I said that with the sarcastic voice, but as you know, I actually believe that.
Do you?
I do, yes. I think that Alabama's season was very underrated and that people are going to sleep on them next year. And that's a good place to be in.
I don't think you understand Alabama. Alabama doesn't get underrated. People don't sleep on Alabama.
Of course they do.
People in Alabama don't sleep on Alabama. You either win at Alabama or you don't. There's not a like.
I agree that it's not like Kellen DeBoer can go 9-3 next year and people are going to be good with it because it was like, well, last year we were 8-5 or whatever. Which is not my point. My point is that I think people will underrate their chances of winning the national championship nationally because they will look at their record and not their underlying performance, which was dramatically better than their record.
Okay. Ryan Grubb and Kellen DeBoer are going to lead Austin Mack.
Austin Mack isn't actually.
No, he's not actually going to be the quarterback. But like, I'm going to give that one a fat old maybe. I think if they don't make the playoff, there's a good chance that he's fired.
I think that is plausible. Again, I'm saying I think there's like a 60% chance they make the playoff,
and a 60% chance that he's offensive coordinator at the University of Washington the following season.
A negative 60% chance of that, I would say. And even anyway. That's maybe overstating things.
Anyway, we're talking about the Conference of Champions here.
You're right, not the SEC.
The School of Champions.
Although the SEC does have a very good basketball program. very strong year for them. I think they're going to put like 12 teams in the men's NCAA tournament, more than the Big Ten will. Let's see here. What is the championship odds? Yeah, Alabama is sitting there at 13-1, currently
Where is that
seventh.
overall? Seventh? I mean, that's
Yeah.
not that underrated. Also, considering they
But
do
they're
not have a
behind a
star.
school that got just completely annihilated in the its opening game of the college football playoff last year.
I mean, speaking of teams that tend to get overrated,
Yeah.
look, don't make me pull up the QBR for each team's starting quarterbacks from Seattle and that school in the short sample size
I
that they
believe we
played.
refer to it as the slow school down south, correct?
There we go. Slow school down south. My money would be on Alabama over them for the national championship next year.
To see, there you go.
That's not what the comparison is, though. We're not comparing them to bad schools. Who else is ahead of them?
Ohio State,
I mean, yeah, Texas.
Texas, Georgia, Penn State, Notre Dame. So,
I
there you
don't
go.
think that's being underrated based upon those schools. I think they're
Where
being appropriately rated.
is Washington currently plus 30,000?
30,000.
Would you like to guess some other schools that are also plus 30,000? I mean,
It's like Georgia Tech is in there, right? Louisville.
I mean, not specifically at plus 30,000. There is another Big Ten school that we played before we joined the Big Ten.
That we played before we joined the Big Ten?
That should narrow it down, but apparently it didn't.
Michigan State?
Yes.
Oh my God.
They haven't been looking at Demond Williams Jr.'s QBR either, as it turns out.
I mean, I also would not bet too much money on UW to win the national championship, but
No, but if you're gonna, like, if you're talking about winning the national championship, I do think there's probably something to be said for having a quarterback who is inexperienced but very effective when he plays, because like the high-end potential outcomes are so high, whereas, I don't know who Michigan State has on their roster, but like even if their median outcome is better than Washington or the same, like the championship probability is probably lower unless you have an uncertain, option at quarterback, right?
yeah, no, I agree.
So.
Is Aiden Childs still there? I assume. I think he might partially fall under that category of what you're talking about. I mean, he's a sophomore. He just wasn't as good. Like, I don't know, 62nd in QBR last year. But if you want to project like him getting significantly better, he's somebody who probably could get better. And that's probably why Michigan State is where they are.
But also in the second year in Jonathan Smith's system, as opposed to just the is a true freshman, Demond Williams.
Not his
So,
second year, his third
well, yeah, but I'm saying last year was his second year for, because that's where we're comparing
year.
the stats. Right, but this is not a podcast about Michigan State's
I don't know how
2025 football team.
I like that you just kept going. I was like, I'm fine to move on, but you...
We don't have any hot takes this week, do we?
No, we don't have hot takes. We're
You
just we're
have
so
Mariners
close.
takes?
I no,
Oh.
I don't have Mariners takes. I considered,
Did you
like
see the photo?
which photo?
The photo of the Mariners Hall of Famers reunited at spring training on Monday?
I did. What do you mean reunited? Did they ever all play together?
No, but I'm sure they've been in the same room at the same
I mean,
time
sure,
before.
yeah, that's such a strange way to describe it. It's not like they all played together and they've gotten back together for this moment. But I did see that photo. I don't know. It's fine. I'm not like that triggered every time I see a photo of Ichiro.
It's more to think of him on the same level as Griffey, I think, that people thought it might be triggering to you.
Ichiro's an appropriate haul. It's fine. I just like let it go. Like, yes, we can all worship the slap single hitter. Like, he was good at what he did. It's okay. Are we
Doesn't
talking
seem.
basketball at all?
I don't have it on my list. Do you want to talk basketball?
Well, first off, Portland Trailblazers.
The.
Second off,
They're competitive. They're a real team. They're just like destroying these bad teams, which is what we talked about last week. They kind of needed to do, right?
I was looking at the schedule, and there's just so many hard games on the schedule. But, you know, coming up, I'm like, the way that I view the Blazers is in standard definition. But the way that my outlook for them is like, if they play anybody good, I'm like, oh, well, they can't win that game. It's basically like if they play a bad team, I'm like, that is an easy win. And any team that is like in the proper playoffs in the Eastern Conference or in the play-in or better in the Western Conference, I'm like, oh, they got no shot versus those teams.
I mean,
And
that probably is true. There's a pretty big distinction between the good teams and the bad teams in the league.
it's just kind of a strange place for them to be, but I think they are the best team that is not like I feel like they are probably a better team in this moment than almost any of the East teams that are in the play-in. And I think they are the best team. They're worse than all of the West teams that are in the playoffs or the play-in. But they're the best team after that.
Well, the question is Kyrie Irving's health after he left Monday night's game with a knee injury. So the Blazers are 4 games back of Dallas for the 10th and final play-in spot. Like it would be very difficult. But also, you know, usually I do the thing where it's like, well, yes, they have to be catch Dallas, but also they have to be better than the other team but in front of them.
The
But the other
Phoenix
team in front
2-8
of
in
them
their
is
last 10.
Phoenix, who
And they beat Phoenix just back to back, you know, not that long ago, pretty comfortably.
they did. So I like their chances of surpassing Phoenix.
They've still been good without DeAndre Ayton as well. Like it hasn't, I was curious if that would show, because I thought DeAndre Ayton was playing pretty well, but
He
I feel like
was,
it
yeah.
hasn't changed who they are as a team all that much being without DeAndre
No. But they gave Cleveland a good run
Ayton. It was without
on
Donovan
Sunday.
Mitchell.
Yes.
I went and looked that up because I got the notification. I was like, wow, I still think it's impressive to take Cleveland in Cleveland, even without Donovan Mitchell, to
Without
overtime.
question. Yeah. No,
So I saw
it's.
that and I was like, oh, damn, this is for real. Are the Blazers a playoff or play-in team next year?
It's tough because San Antonio, we have to assume, is going to get a lot better next year. You know, presumably a full season of a healthy Victor Wembanyama, a full season with De'Aaron Fox, and, you know, Stephon Castle's development and some ability to upgrade around the edges. So I. Like, even if one of the 10 teams that's currently ahead of them falls out, and there's no one that you would look at and say, oh, that team's going to be way worse next year. You know, there are some teams that you would say, oh, they might be incrementally worse, but there's no one you'd be like, oh, that team's probably going to collapse.
Yeah, the Clippers, the Kings, the Warriors are kind of like those teams could fade.
I mean, the Warriors right now, I would say, actually, are probably, I don't. I mean, they're up into six in the West at the
Hey,
moment. It's only by a half game.
be careful with what you're about to say. I know what you're about to say, and I'm
What?
telling you, be careful.
Which is that I don't think that there is, there's some downside risk in terms of health, but I don't think they're as vulnerable as like Minnesota would be the team I would look at in addition to
Really?
Sacramento and the Clippers. Yeah.
Even though they're, I mean, I guess, yeah, they're still pretty young, though.
They are somewhat young, but they're also very expensive and may have to shed some talent this offseason.
Okay. I mean, it's a tough place to be in for Portland because you just have to get so good in the Western Conference because of how many good teams there are. But I do feel like, you know, this is being done with a lot of young players right now. So I've really been enjoying the ride. And if they played out through the rest of the season, it's just a fun season overall. Of course, what I was telling you to be careful about is the Los Angeles Lakers. My Los Angeles Lakers.
What
And
was I going to say negative about the Los Angeles Lakers
I'm
for
not going to
next
say,
year?
I wasn't going to say you were saying anything negative, but I thought you were going to say that the Warriors had the second best odds to win the West.
Well, I still probably would put Denver ahead of the Lakers, but I would have the Lakers third at this point.
So it goes OKC, Denver, Lakers to you.
Yes.
I just find the Grizzlies to be so abhorrent to watch.
Oh, that's a bad take. They're very fun
Really?
to
I do
watch.
not find them to be interesting to watch at all. Every time they're on a national TV, I'm like, oh, God, I'm good. And also any team from the
All
Eastern
those
Conference, of
endless
course.
Memphis Grizzlies national TV
They
games.
no, they're on a lot.
Are
They're on
they?
more than you think. Yes.
I mean, I suppose it's not as big of a distinction to me as it is to you.
But also, aside from when Cleveland and Boston play each other in an occasional Knicks game, every team in the Eastern Conference is uninteresting for me to watch. Is Risa Shea coming on?
No, not really.
Okay.
Yeah,
I saw he had a monster game today.
People have, oh, did he? People have basically decided that, in my view, that the Grizzlies are on national TV on both Wednesday and Friday this week. So there you go.
You might not notice because you just watch whatever game, but
They
I'm sort
don't
of in the
play
in the
another
loop.
national TV game until the end of March.
Okay.
So, people have sort of decided that Stephon Castle was like the de facto number one pick of last year's draft. Although, who finally had a good game today?
Who, Reed Shepherd?
Reed Shepherd got the
There we
start
go.
in OKC.
He started from the G League to the starting lineup? The
Well, I
Reed
mean,
Shepherd story?
he was in the G League for three games. Let's all remain calm. He played nearly as many games for the G League in the All-Star Rookie Challenge as he did in the actual G League. But he had 25 tonight on 10 of 17 shooting, as the Rockets did lose to the Thunder without three starters.
Who would have thought Monday, March 3rd would be the day that Reed Shepherd and Zachary Richesse put it together?
Yeah, well, what are the
That
odds?
that's exactly the amount of time that it takes to put it together in the NBA. Okay, so my other take is about this. We're getting to the time of year where I think it's fun that the Lakers being good and also the Lakers being good with a new Luka Doncic has really breathed a lot of fresh air
No, have I
into the
told you
NBA
that
season.
they're playing in Boston on Saturday?
And you're going to it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no,
That
I
is.
knew about that. I'm going to miss it because I think I'm at a children's baseball tournament, the first children's baseball tournament of the year. So my take is I would woke up thinking about this. All my best takes, I wake up thinking about. And I'm just like pouring sweat, Ichiro. That's my version of somebody had a bad opinion on the internet. I'm in the middle of the night thinking about slap singles and Hall of Fames. But I think this time of year, again, the NBA got dealt a very good hand because of the Luka trade happening when it did, that all of a sudden the Lakers are like the most interesting team to watch in the NBA for probably like, I don't even know when the last time there was anybody this fun to watch, right?
Like, I don't know. I mean, the well, nobody in as big of a market who's already a big draw and then also became that much more exciting to watch.
I think you probably have to go back to like KD Warriors at the very least. I mean, Wemby was, but like it was the beginning of the season. Wemby just wasn't that good.
You could
And
maybe say when AD first went to the Lakers.
that was pretty good. Was that the COVID season? Was his first season there?
It was the season that was interrupted by COVID, yeah. So it's at the start of the season, it was normal conditions.
And then they finished it in the bubble, and that's when they won the championship.
Well, we're coming, that's right. We're coming up on the 5-year anniversary of the NBA shutting down. That's 1 week from tomorrow.
That was the day. That was the day that COVID happened, was when the NBA shut down. That's when we knew.
The Huskies lost in the Pac-12 tournament, and then there was no Pac-12 champion.
That was March 4th.
No, it was more, a week from tomorrow, so it's March 11th.
Okay. All these people were way behind. I was shut down way before then. I
We
was
did
shut down
record, well, it
February 29th.
was it March 2nd that we recorded the Talkin' Taco Time in the Taco Time?
I was panicked every second of it. We didn't know about masking at the time, of course, because
Obviously not, but
not like it
we.
had been happening in Asia for years before then.
But boy, were we washing
We
our
just had
hands a lot.
no idea.
That would have been Sunday, March 1st, that we recorded the Talkin' Taco Time live. It was, of course, March 5th through 8th that I flew on a plane and gathered with a bunch of
That
people in
was really
Boston.
nuts. That was really nuts that you did that.
Not a great choice in hindsight.
That March 1st was for me. Literally, I did not leave the house after that. It's honestly kind of fun to think about now because it's over. I was reminiscing about that St. Patrick's Day because Keeleen had like a mild cough and I banished her to the room. I was like, "You are in full on quarantine. I will leave a corned beef at your door. I will knock when it's there." Anyway, unrelated to any of this, the basketball season around this time of year and always the basketball regular season is not necessarily that fun. And I think we can mostly agree on that.
The basketball regular season can certainly be a slog.
And honestly, the basketball playoffs is a slog also sometimes. Because it
But no
goes
one
on
would say
forever.
it's not fun.
And let me tell you, the fix for all this, we need different court sizes and different elements in the NBA. Because every single team is basically the same team, right? Everywhere you go, it's like McDonald's. It is not that interesting overall. There aren't even necessarily that many organizations that have like an identity. In the NFL, the field is the same, but weather is such a huge factor in all of the different places that you go. And also, as a byproduct of playing so few games, like you do sort of have these teams that have cultures that last for, generations, right? Like the Steelers culture has lasted for generations. The NBA, with having everything uniform, you go anywhere in the league, it is more or less the same experience overall. And they need different dimensions. There should be different lengths of 3-point lines. There should be different amounts of space before the 3-point line so that teams can build their rosters around the individual court that they play on and have a different experience everywhere you go. Because that to me, if all of a sudden you're playing a game and you're like, oh, damn, they're playing in Houston tonight or whatever, they have a 20-foot 3-point line. Like, they would make the games way more compelling to watch. It would make playoff series way more compelling to watch. Thinking about how teams adapt home versus road and what they do strategy-wise if things are different. Different size free throw lines, right? Like all of the things, you should be able to have some sort of competitive advantage that you could build a roster around.
I would like to ask what it is about being a fan of Seattle sports teams that makes you think that this is a good idea. Because all of these things work against Seattle sports teams, who cannot, our football teams cannot play in the rain.
Well,
Our
that doesn't
baseball
exactly make
team,
sense.
it doesn't make sense, I agree, but it's true. Our baseball team has a home field that so distorts our view of our hitters that they cannot wait to go and sign with the Dodgers and win World Series and hit home runs.
Hold on a second. Hold on. Because that's part of what's fun about it. Yes, it's
No,
annoying stuff,
that's
but
not fun.
also it was different in the 90s. So we have experienced
Yeah, but it
both
still
of these
didn't
two
lead
spectrums.
to the team's winning.
It doesn't, the team didn't win because the team hasn't won. Like I don't feel like the stadium is the reason. They won the most games in baseball history in the field that you're talking about. It's not, the field isn't holding them back. If you want to point to the things holding them back, you should probably point to ownership.
Well, we
And
really got to where every Mariners discussion ultimately gets to, even though we were having an NBA discussion.
but that's not what I'm talking about. The other thing with the Mariners is it's fun when people talk about how they have a historically great rotation. We might know that the rotation is not necessarily historically great, but how awesome is it that you can watch Bryce Miller, Brian Wu, Luis Castillo, George Kirby, Logan Gilbert? Like, it is so much fun
I
to
don't
watch
think the
them and
people
that
that
they're
are talking about
elevated.
it are citing it in a "this is so fun" way. They're citing it in a "can you believe that the offense is letting down this historic rotation" way,
But
which is
that's
not
fine.
fun.
But complaining about it is also part of the experience. There's nothing to
Again, I'm going to
complain
opt
about
out.
in the NBA.
I've opted out. There's I people
You're
found some
opting
things to
out of
complain
the
about.
Mariners?
I'm opting out of complaining. People have found a few things to complain about in the NBA, including one factor that does change from game to game. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They're known as referees.
Do the referees change based upon home court and road court? Like
Yeah.
they're influenced by the crowd, but I mean, how much has that diminished also? Because home field advantage is
Of
kind of
course.
lowered across the NFL.
Yeah.
That is less fun. Things being fair, we are so consumed with this concept
I
of
agree with that.
fairness. Things we should be focused more on going into different atmospheres and being like, that is a crazy atmosphere to go
The
into.
other thing we need to note here is in this moment, RIP Gene Hackman, his wife, Betsy Arakawa, and their dog. I don't know if you're familiar with a movie called Hoosiers. I don't want to defend Hoosiers in its totality, but I do want to defend the scene where Gene Hackman says, "You'll find the dimensions are the same as our gym back at Hickory." That's iconic, and that's the beauty of basketball, is that wherever you go, I obviously from high school to college to NBA, the 3-point lines are different and there are slightly different court sizes, but any level of competition, the hoop is the same. And the courts are generally the same. And I think that's a feature, not a bug. So I'm going to throw it, categorize this under Tristan fixes a thing that doesn't need for
I
that
think
isn't
you
broken.
might be wrong. You might be wrong about that. I'm telling you, those $2 tickets in Washington might need to be fixed.
I mean, to go back to your point, I don't think the court size is the problem in Washington.
If you could build it, like, teams should have
Also, the
much
Wizards are
better.
good, too good now.
Oh
Since
yeah.
they got Marcus Smart and Chris Middleton, like they're gonna need to start shutting some guys down
Did they not
soon.
have Marcus Smart beforehand? Because I was like,
No, they got him at the deadline.
he was definitely a factor in that game. And I was like, man, I kind of like Marcus Smart. But
I mean, when you're there and just rooting for the Wizards, yeah, obviously. Marcus Smart is one of those guys when he's on your team, he's amazing.
anyway, I think you're wrong about this. That's not a feature that the court size is the same. I'm sorry, Hoosiers. But in college, that's actually kind of the big the arenas are so small that you can have different atmospheres at college. But
I
in the
agree with that.
NBA, it's a different thing. Like, there's not a student section in the same way. I get that, you know, Steve Ballmer's trying to do
Yeah.
something like that.
How dare you disrespect the wall like that?
No, I think the wall is great. I'm so for the wall, but in college, you have a group of people who go to games. That's maybe another thing that the NBA needs, is they should have not just mandated tickets. Granted, this is a capitalism issue, so it's not going to happen, but like a mandated group of tickets that are for hardcore fans or whatever that are way
Several
cheaper than
other
others.
teams do this. Milwaukee notably has a section, and
Are
there
they
are a few
close
others.
though, or is it like two whatever?
They're probably not close.
Because in the NBA or in college, they're right on the court. Having the kids right there is part of, it's literally the only thing holding college basketball still together is the atmospheres.
This is also something that happens at schools that are not the University of Washington. Although
I
I
mean,
will say,
we did.
I was in the dog pack overflow for the Rutgers game,
Hello.
and it gradually like got a little uncomfortably crowded. Not like there was
There were
actually like
people
anyone
within, like,
sitting next to me, but it was like I don't have a direct path out of this row right now, like I
is the,
prefer.
yeah, no, those are the best. That you're in the dog pack overflow, you mean like the top three rows of the arena?
Yeah.
Our
Where
favorite seats.
you went? Yeah.
Oh
Oh,
my
I
God.
started out in my
Love it.
seat and I
Love
was
it up
like,
there.
oh no, this is not for me.
On press row, or did you have a seat?
I know I bought tickets to that game. I didn't get a credential. I did not want to have to bother with the pretense of covering that game.
Wow.
Although it's funny that I looked over on press row, it was like Percy Allen and like five other people. There was plenty of good seats still available in the media
I don't think
section.
they were going to reject you for it.
I'm not concerned about that either.
You just
No.
didn't want to bother.
Right.
ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton. One of us there in the crowd. I didn't think he had it in him. I didn't think he did.
You know what? I was stirred to even cheer at the end of the game. I don't think we discussed that in the recap. The emotions
People,
rose within me.
he
It's so weird
cheered.
because, like, obviously at a football game, I
Stirred
am
to
like
even cheer.
so intensely into it at all times. And like my sole purpose in attending UW football games, I mean, maybe not non-conference, you know, like the bye games, but like competitive games is how can I influence this outcome by making as much noise as possible when the team is on defense? That is my logic. And then I go to a basketball game and I stand there silently scouting.
Wow, that is wild. So, but you were moved to cheer?
I was, yeah. And
Ooh,
then they lost in
wow.
overtime and I was no longer moved.
Yeah.
I was moved to stop following the season.
No, they really played a game, and I was like, yep.
Oh, well, actually, we're barely going to talk about it.
I mean, it was, I think LVEK pointed out in the Discord where he was like, the Discord is as interested in this game as the fans are in a whiteout. Just like, there's so many things. I talk to artists about this sometimes, and it's like, you need a fan base to try stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you could have all the cool ideas in the world. You know, you could have so many great ideas, and everybody's like, you know, Kendrick Lamar does this thing, or teasing things, or Frank Ocean doesn't need to post on socials. And it's like, that's great because he's Frank Ocean. But you could do a whiteout. Ohio State could do a whiteout. Penn State could do a whiteout. The University of Washington, I'm so sorry for you. You cannot do a whiteout.
But that's the other thing is it's not like any of these are original ideas at the UW. It's just, hey, Penn State did it. Let's do it too. And they had a lot of fans. So therefore, if we do it, we'll have a lot of fans.
Yeah, the blackout that they did. That was a blackout, right? Or a purple out? Was it a purple out?
For the Huskies?
Yeah, the one that we did the week after Penn State, where it's
Oh
like
yeah, it was a I believe that was a blackout, yes.
I think it might have been a purple out. I don't remember. Nobody did it. Doesn't matter. I mean,
I mean, I did do it.
people did do it, but
I
it's
just
just
don't
like
remember what I did.
there are a lot of things that were really dope to do if you have an active fan base. And there's basically no sport at the University of Washington that has that active fan base except
Oh,
for track and field, baby.
what's he say? Crew? Crew?
Pole vaulting.
Also,
Three
have we
words.
ever attended a softball game, like actually in the softball stadium? Or
I
have
have.
we, ex you have? Okay, I've
Yeah.
exclusively been in the Husky Stadium overflow. That's
I
all I
went
know exists.
last year to a softball game.
Yeah, nice.
It was great.
So, anyways, Mariners spring training continues.
That was I it was like considering his hot takes, I'm actually kind of surprised how much you disagree with that hot take about having, 'cause again, the different 3 points and 3 point lengths in different arenas would be very fun. You can't
It
tell me
would
it wouldn't
be
be.
interesting. I think there's that interesting is not necessarily fun because it probably would lead to players missing a lot more three. Also, I have attended a game where the 3 point lines were at different lengths. I don't know if you remember this. Last year at the NCAA Women's Tournament in Portland, one of the lines was mispainted, and it just resulted in teams shooting worse from it, even though it was closer. So,
That's
very
actually really
strange.
interesting. But that's how you build in the advantage as the home team. Like if the distance of
But
the
you're
three-point line that you're
half of the teams are always going to be on the road, so you're always like, yes, the
you will
one team
shoot
will be
better at
accustomed to it,
home. Yeah. So you'll shoot
but
better at
you
home
also
in the
shoot way
same
worse on
way.
the road. I mean, I
Fine.
agree that having a
The
home court
Mariners
advantage
pitch
is
better at
better.
home than they do on the road.
Yeah, but they hit better on the road. Ends up the same.
This probably would end up the same also. Or maybe that team would not, they would, but like maybe they would have a huge advantage on the road and a huge disadvantage, or a huge advantage at home and a huge disadvantage on the road. That's fine. They don't need to be equal. Things don't need to be the same. Every other sport has some elements that change except for basketball.
Every other
Hydroplane
sport,
racing.
I mean volleyball. I don't know. You're thinking kind of narrowly to, I mean,
No,
hockey. Hockey has a different, I believe they have a different international rink size than the NHL and the professional size. I think that, but all the NHL rinks are the same. So yeah, that
I
was.
mean, home field advantage,
But
I think it
hydroplane
probably matters
racing, they
the
do have
least.
some 2 mile courses and some 2.5 mile courses. And obviously, we haven't always had the San Diego race in a period of time, but there you have salt water as opposed to the fresh water that they typically race on. So that does introduce some new variables. But you know what the thing is here is that they're not practicing hydroplane racing in quite the same way as people are practicing shooting threes.
The home ice advantage in hockey, it must be the lowest of any sport, I would assume.
I think baseball was the lowest.
Even with the different dimensions.
Because again, refereeing is the source of home advantage, not all
They're
this other
going to
stuff.
great lengths in the NBA, way
I
too great
agree.
lengths in the NBA to take that element
I
out of
agree
it.
with
And I'm
this
just
part of
like,
the take.
let the refs call it kind of improperly. Like,
100%.
the fingertip rule, if the ball hits it, I am so, it is the thing that I
Okay.
hate the most about the NBA. If a ball is tipped, it should be who causes, it's a little complicated to do, but like if a ball hits a fingertip, gets deflected off somebody and hits their fingertip and then goes out of bounds, it should still be that team's ball. It's fucking stupid.
Well, we are pretty far afield from the original point now. Let's go to the roundup.
All right. Did we wait, are we doing the Mariners? We did.
I didn't have any updates on them. They're playing
Okay,
spring
we don't have
training.
spring training updates.
Rowdy Tellez may have hit a home run. I don't know. That was cool.
He's going to be a factor. Rowdy Tellez is going to do some things.
The NHL trade deadline coming up this Friday. We will see how active the Kraken are. Have several players on expiring contracts that would be attractive to contenders. They haven't really been a team that has traded away at the deadline a whole lot other than their inaugural season. But this is an opportunity, I think, for Ron Francis to pick up some additional draft picks and young talent because this team is clearly going nowhere. Back from the minor leagues to join them just ahead of the trade deadline is goaltender Philip Grubauer, also just in time for his bobble night. Bobblehead night Tuesday at Climate Pledge Arena. Coachella Valley netminders Aleš Štečka and Nicky Kokko both made their NHL debuts while Grubauer was with the AHL affiliate. Kokko at age 20, so that was kind of interesting to see. He got an opportunity. All right, Seattle Sounders. You were there Wednesday versus Antigua as they closed out the round of 3-2 in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. Set the scene.
And I was like, Mr. President, change the size of these pitches.
I mean, they do actually have different pitch
I know.
sizes.
I
Yeah.
know. This was the, I'm not going to even get into the take. I've been too far afield right now, but it was a great night. I mean, Seattle, Washington showed up on Wednesday. It was beautiful. They didn't show up at the match, of course.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
But weather-wise, Seattle, Washington showed up, and I thought the Sounders looked. It was funny. I was seeing people be like, "Oh, it was such an ugly game." I thought the Sounders played fairly well overall. I mean, the amount of chances that they had during the match, they gave up a handful of chances too. But you know, they could have scored quite a few more goals in this one. Still ended up with three, but
Yeah,
I don't know what the expected goals was.
I think if there was a criticism, it was probably that they were sloppy defensively rather than like bad per se, I guess.
It's a little bit when you go into a match up 3-1. I was interested that they played it mostly even. You know, I was curious kind of how they would approach that, if it would be more defensive, but I think they just knew that they were a better club overall.
We were all interested in that. Again, as we talked about on last week's pod, they rested players at the weekend in MLS action in their MLS opener and went with basically a full strength lineup in this one, despite the 3-1 advantage. What was the expected goals here? Don't have that for this one. Antigua actually had more shots. Sounders had six on target, 2-5 for Antigua, but Pedro de la Vega opened the scoring in the 24th minute. Antigua then equalized in first half stoppage time. Jesus Ferreira and Paul Arriola, who I assume are the new players you didn't know were on the team.
I like kind of knew,
Yeah.
but
You enjoy playing it up that you didn't know.
if I couldn't have told you their names, I mean, I definitely was like, oh, that's Rui Diaz or whatever.
They combined again for the second consecutive game to give the Sounders the lead in the second half. And then De La Vega added a second for a brace to make it 3-1 in the 88th minute. So a 6-2 win on aggregate for the
I thought
Sounders.
Ferreira is great, kind of all over the place. De La Vega as well. The player, though, that stood out to me, didn't play a lot of minutes, but was Georgi Mungungu.
Yeah.
I mean,
He.
just chances instantly, constant chances,
Now, he was
super high
off the
motor.
bench in this one, right? Has started the two MLS matches.
Has he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking to see what minute he came in. It says the 93rd minute, but that doesn't seem right.
I think that's his number.
Oh, I see. Yeah, no, okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
He
He, I
came
mean,
in
he,
the 74th
I
for
was gonna say he
Ferreira.
played for like 20 minutes. But the amount of chances that he created during that time period is pretty incredible. Obviously, just moving at a completely different pace, partially just because he had fresh legs as well, but moved at a totally different pace than everybody else. Was able to control the ball. I was like, who is that guy? What in the hell? I was like, is he a prospect? Are we excited about this? Because
Age
I was in that
22,
moment.
so certainly still a young player. Yeah, and I think definitely like he's clearly surpassed Danny Musovski in the rotation right now as an attacker.
And he has one eye.
I did not know that. Wow. All right, so the Sounders are on to the round of 16. I believe I said last time that it would be to the quarterfinals, still a round shy of that. Where they will take on Cruz Azul starting Wednesday at Lumen Field. Cruz Azul dominated Dominican club Real Hope by a combined 7-0 aggregate scoreline back in early February to advance. It's a matchup of two former CONCACAF champions, with Cruz Azul winning in 2013-14. They haven't appeared since 2022, but qualified as runners up in last year's Liga MX Clausura. They lost to Club America in the Clausura final, as well as last year's Apertura playoffs after winning that table. They are currently tied for fourth in the ongoing Clausura, led by Mexican international Angel Sepulveda, who has 15 goals across all competitions. So now, like, Sounders coming up against a real opponent. There's a pretty dramatic change in level of play. Obviously, there is for Cruz Azul as well, but We will see if the Sounders can keep it going. But clearly, this is something they are prioritizing as another DF CONCACAF Champions Cup run. And we saw the downside of that in a desultory loss at Salt Lake at the weekend. A Nuhu own goal gave RSL the lead in the 8th minute, and the Sounders never particularly threatened to equalize with just 3 shots on target before allowing a second goal in the 79th minute, and now are in danger of starting with just 1 point from their first 3 matches with LAFC coming to town on Saturday. LAFC is also busy with the CONCACAF Champions Cup, having beaten the Colorado Rapids in the round of 32 based on away goals, losing 2-1 on the road and winning 1-0 at home. They are facing another MLS rival, Columbus, in the round of 16. That series began Tuesday night and or will begin, I should say, Tuesday night. So they'll have an extra day in between matches as compared to the Sounders, but do have to travel. Despite that CONCACAF Champions Cup action, LAFC has also taken 6 points from their first two league matches with a pair of 1-0 wins. Some disappointing news for the Reign, who lost forward Veronica Lotzko to an Achilles rupture suffered in their preseason friendly against Bay FC. They put her on the season-ending injury list last week, officially ruling her out. So get well soon to Veronica Lotzko. Reign will be without her. UW women's basketball. Look, this is not, UW may not be a women's basketball school, but they are moving ever closer to the first NCAA tournament appearance by either the UW men or UW women since 2019, with a pair of big wins last weekend. On Wednesday, that was at Minnesota, where they won 72-62 behind 26 points on 10 of 13 shooting from Elle Ladin, who hit all 4 of her 3-point attempts. Delia Daniels had 14 points, 10 boards. The Huskies shot 58% from the field. And then on Sunday, they closed out the Big Ten regular season hosting Oregon on Senior Day. Huskies went down 19-12 after 1 quarter, but quickly reclaimed the lead and went up by double digits in the 4th quarter before holding on with strong foul shooting late. Ladine and Savia Sellers had 15 apiece, and Daniels 13 points, 7 boards, 4 steals, and 4 blocks in her
All
final
right.
game at Heckhead as a 5th-year senior. So the Big Ten Women's tournament now starts Wednesday in Indianapolis. The Huskies will be the number
As in
12
two
seed.
days from now?
It's in 2 days from now. That's part of why we're
Wow.
releasing this podcast on a Tuesday, so that you have some time to listen before the Sounders get their series underway in this tournament. So the Huskies
Can you
will
just
be,
inform me when these things are happening?
I can.
Okay,
Huskies will
great.
be the number 12 seed. They went 9-9. They finished even in conference play and finished 12th in the Big
Wow.
Ten, which is confusing on a number of levels. But the Big Ten, very bottom heavy this year in women's basketball. A number of teams that really struggled against the rest of the field. And they will take on Minnesota once again at 12:30 p.m. on Wednesday. The winner of that will take on Michigan in the second round on Thursday. And this is probably possibly a loser leaves town matchup
Oh
here,
my God.
because these two
Okay.
teams are right there on the bubble. Huskies currently number 65 of 68 teams in Charlie Cream's projections on ESPN, just ahead of Minnesota. They have in identical, basically, wins above bubble at parktorvik.com, both a half win above bubble, and they would both go about almost exactly to even if they lost this game. So, like, I don't think beating Minnesota necessarily guarantees them a spot, but you'd feel pretty good about your situation if you beat Minnesota and then have a chance to like really secure things by beating Michigan. And if you don't lose to Minnesota, you're going to be sweating things out right up until Selection Sunday, which is a week and a half in the women's game, because the conference tournaments are a week earlier. So
It makes me nervous.
I really advise beating Minnesota.
I mean, they just have to win this game, basically, is what you're saying. Because I, with all being one of the last teams in the bubble, with everything that could happen during conference tournament season, it's not a great place to be. You're
No.
feeling like you're probably out at that point, unless you go claim a spot. And maybe beating Minnesota is that, you know, obviously 2 wins more gets them to that point, but I would assume if they lose this game that they're out. I would probably go into Selection Sunday not feeling good about it. So
Which is
who
interesting
else?
because I think there was a lot of feeling after the win on Sunday against Oregon, like, oh, okay, the Huskies clinched a berth. And it's like, ee! Then you look at it and they actually moved down. They slid down a bit. I don't know who moved up. Somebody else had some win that moved up in ESPN's bracketology, but they were one of the last four byes and then dropped into the last four in after beating Oregon.
It was kind of like when the Seahawks, they beat Arizona, they beat the Niners, they beat Arizona, and we were like, woo, riding high, and Football Outsiders was like, not so fast, my friend. And sadly, the stats are right sometimes.
Well, yes. I mean, hopefully this goes better for the Huskies than any Seahawks Rams matchups did that mattered.
So, who else should we be paying attention to this weekend as we head toward conference championship weekend?
So a lot of Big Ten teams are on the bubble is interesting. Three of the last four byes at ESPN are Oregon, Indiana, and Nebraska, two of whom the Huskies have beaten
Tell me
recently.
less on cheering against those teams. We're good.
Well, I mean, the one thing is the Ducks and Hoosiers are the number eight and number nine seeds, even though Indiana UW finished as part of a, no, I guess they were a game back of these teams. They were 10 and eight. So they're the eight and nine seeds. They're going to play each other. So you don't have an opportunity for a bad loss, I would say. So their positioning probably isn't going to change very much. Nebraska is the one team that could lose ground. They're facing Rutgers in their opening round matchup. They should cruise in that, but if something goes wrong, then that could be a problem for the Cornhuskers. The other one of the last four teams to bye right now is Iowa State, which is the number seven seed in the Big 12 tournament playing on Thursday. Number eight seed Arizona and old friend Adia Barnes are also on the bubble. They're one of the first four out, but might need to upset top-seeded TCU to burnish their resume because, the Big 12 doesn't have quite the depth of the Big Ten, so their first round win wouldn't be as big of a deal. Princeton and Harvard is an interesting situation. They're both in the last four in right now. One of them is probably going to earn the auto bid from the Ivy. The other probably will not make it if you're that close, I would say. And then Virginia Tech, the first team out, also the number eight seed in the ACC tournament, set to potentially play top seed NC State with a win on Thursday over Georgia Tech.
Okay. Well, I mean, basically just beat Minnesota. And then where is Michigan? What are they?
They're the fifth seed in the Big Ten tournament. I don't know where they
Still a
are in
winnable
bracketology.
game.
Oh yeah, very much so. I mean, look, one of the things about this year's UW team is like they finally kind of got hot during this four-game winning streak at the end of the Big Ten regular season. It's the first time they'll have finished 500 or better in conference play since they last made the NCAA tournament in 2017. But they were so close to so many big upsets throughout the season. The USC game, where they had the Trojans on the ropes for a long period of time. LSU back in November when they were playing in the Bahamas, I believe, and nearly pulled that upset off against a team that was undefeated. So, they have not been able to figure out one of these big upsets. If they managed to both beat Minnesota and pull that off against Michigan, then that would change their outcome considerably. Michigan's currently a seven seed in the bracket. So it's, not other than USC and UCLA, like not necessarily a lot of elite teams in the Big Ten, but a really deep middle class, I would say, this year is what potentially could get them 12 teams in the tournament. Our UW men's basketball, we talked about this earlier. They were eliminated from the Big Ten tournament with Saturday's 78-62 home loss to Indiana, where they fell behind 24-9 and never really got back into it. Vazumana Diallo had 18 points on 7 of 13 shooting, but no other Husky scored more than 10 points, with Great Osabor held to 4 points on 0 of 5 from the field. They'll wrap up their season Wednesday at USC, and then Sunday they will play their senior day a week later at home against Oregon. This will be interesting because obviously the Huskies are going to be honoring a great number of fifth-year seniors who are out of eligibility, but almost entirely players who are only here for 1 year. Although you do have Frank Kepnong, who's been here for a long period of time. I guess I don't know if he might be able to get some more injury red shirts, although I think this season he's now played too much.
Brian Fox been here for a couple of years.
Great Osabor obviously, made a significant impact during his one season here. You have Louis Courtright, DJ Davis will be a fifth year senior, is a fifth year senior, and then Tyree Iheanacho. So Yeah, a lot of guys who we were saying farewell to from this kind of transition season under Danny Sprinkle, and Courtright has not been with the team for a
I was
period
going to
of
say,
time.
wasn't Louis Courtright kicked off the team?
I thought there was for a while he was going to rejoin, but that hasn't happened yet. So we'll see. Running out of time. We can more properly eulogize this season at its conclusion, I would say.
Not great.
Wasn't the best. UW softball, led by Alexis DeBoer and Stevie Hansen, went 6-0 in the Outrigger Invitational, beating host Hawaii, Howard, and Jackson State twice each, while allowing just six total runs. They are headed this weekend to the Black and Orange Classic in Pocatello, Idaho, against host Idaho State, Montana, Boise State, and Utah in their final non-conference tournament. Certainly not the marquee non-conference matchups that we've seen in years past for UW softball, sort of reflecting their younger, also transitory roster. But exciting to see some good results for DeBoer and Stevie Hansen as they look ahead to league play. All right, Seattle Seahawks. We are 9 days away from the start of the 2025 NFL league year on March 12th, but we are now a week away as we record this from the March 10th start of the legal tampering period in the beginning of free agency. So that's effectively, I would say, the deadline for the Seahawks to make some additional moves to get under the salary cap. So I think what we are expecting this week is some sort of news with Tyler Lockett and then a handful of other players. So we will know much more, I think, about kind of the position of the Seahawks entering free agency, and then maybe get some updates as far as extensions or renegotiations as well. So,
Okay.
in addition to Lockett, some other players that we've talked about as potential candidates, Draymond Jones, who would be an $11.5 million cap savings.
I mean, not a candidate. It's happening with Draymond Jones and
It
with Lockett.
seems very likely. Well, Lockett, the one possibility is a renegotiation that keeps him here at a much, much smaller base salary than or yeah, base salary than his current 10 million plus a $5.3 million roster bonus that he is due on March 17th. So, Lockett knows he's not going to get that here, or on the open market, I should say. But the question is, are you more comfortable taking the kind of enormous pay cut he'd be looking at somewhere else than doing it with the only organization that you've ever been a part of?
It would have to be a pretty steep pay cut for Tyler to come back. Like, basically, a situation that, if he ever wanted to coach or move into some sort of front office type role, like, is Tyler Lockett still an effective football player?
Yes. Yes, he is. Mean,
I'm gonna
it's in a
give that a
smaller role,
maybe.
but it's also we're talking about like he would be the number three wide receiver on a team that just hired an offensive coordinator who likes to use three wide receivers less than almost any coordinator in the league. So, it is what it is from that standpoint.
He was 67th out of 98 wide receivers from PFF, 600 yards last year. It's kind of like Tyler Lockett is a good presence to have. He doesn't like to be hit. There's some reasons to not have Tyler Lockett on the roster. But I think the main reason, as a football player, the main reason to have him there is that everybody seems to like Tyler Lockett. He's a good presence. And
I mean, it's still 8.1 yards per target last season. I don't really give a fuck about PFF's grades for wide receivers because I think they probably overrate stuff that doesn't actually matter and underrate stuff that actually
how
does
much of
matter,
those
which is.
8.1 yards per target happen? Like, I don't. Tyler Lockett's like yards throughout the season,
I don't. I mean, his targets went down because Jackson Smith and Jigba and DK Metcalf were getting the lion's share of the targets. But
Yeah, but that's the
I
point.
mean,
Like, you just can't spend money on
I
Tyler
agree,
Lockett.
but that's you're saying there are football reasons to not have him on the roster, not, and I'm saying there are financial reasons to not have him on the roster.
The football reason it's not on the roster is that he didn't gain more than 28 yards after November.
You can't catch passes you aren't thrown.
Yeah, but they still have the same players on the roster. He's not going to be thrown more passes a year older. Jackson Smith and Jigba isn't going away.
Again, this
You
is
can't passes,
financial
you can't
reasons.
catch passes you aren't thrown. But yes, it's financial reasons. It as much as we would like to have every player on the roster, then.
I suppose,
I would
but I think
rather
people
have
think that
Jake
Tyler Lockett
Bobo
is a.
on the field than Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, I think that's ridiculous. I mean, maybe in the context of Clint Kubiak's system, because it probably will emphasize blocking from the wide receivers too much. I don't know. I'm starting to talk myself out of the Clint Kubiak hire the more I talk about this. Did you see the shoddy quote?
About how he got in trouble for letting Russ cook.
Yeah,
basically
it's like no, that was the good time.
I mean, he's sort of joking about it.
I know,
it's
but I
whatever.
Do think he's still a little chased. Also, the good news is the head coach can't fire him now for pressing the ball too much.
I think there's maybe an argument to be made that the league caught up with that offense pretty quickly, and it caught up overall.
It
I think there's
during
an argument
a
to be made.
Period of time where very rapidly the NFL realized the importance of taking away deep passing.
I mean, you could probably pinpoint the Seahawks as like accelerated that process, that
yeah,
particular
I mean,
Seahawks team.
Like Mahomes obviously was a big part of it too. Like it wasn't just Russell Wilson, but yes. By the way, I wish I could put down money in Vegas, naturally, on the possibility of a Russell Wilson-Tyler Lockett duo both heading to the Raiders.
I don't think so. I think the bridge is burned with
The
Pete.
Russell Wilson bridge?
I think the Russell Wilson bridge is burned with Pete.
We might want to consult the rumor mill. Because everyone else seems to think it's very plausible.
We will see. I'm still a little bit more skeptical.
I may confront you over at a Starbucks if Russell Wilson signs there.
You wouldn't find me at a Starbucks, so that would be hard to do. Dunkin' Donuts, that's a little different. But okay, what about the next piece?
All right, the most notable Seahawks free agent is obviously linebacker Ernest Jones IV. We'll see if they can get something done with him before free agency starts. Then defensive tackle Jaron Reed and veteran guard Lincoln Tomlinson, the other full-time starters hitting free agency. We'll also see within the next week here where they tender restricted free agent Josh Jobe, who emerged as a starter in the second half of last season.
I mean, they're going to figure out a way to get Ernest Jones back. It's just they're going to do it.
It would be very shocking. I have not changed my assessment, which was 95% and was only third highest because you were at 100% of Ernest Jones.
I got
Jones
a lot
returning.
Of hundreds in there. I'm feeling pretty good about Geno Smith right now.
I mean, you're not that much higher than the rest. Ben's higher than on Geno than you were.
I didn't
he
give it a
in,
full 100?
No, you gave it a 90.
Oh.
The player you did give a full 100 to is DK Metcalf. And now let's discuss the DK Metcalf trade rumors saga. Corbin K. Smith of Locked On Seahawks reported last week that the Seahawks had discussed a Metcalf trade with several teams, and the Packers were a team to watch with an offer of a draft pick and one of their young wide receivers. Peter Bukowski of Locked On Packers reported Green Bay had, quote, an offer they think can land Metcalf, but then the Athletics Packers beat writer Matt Schneiderman counter-reported that, quote, there has been no contact or negotiations as of now between the Packers and Seahawks regarding a DK Metcalf trade.
Let's see him duke it out.
We don't want to encourage violence.
That's how we take care of our problems in the NFL now. I get it. You're nervous about it. You don't want to be charged to fight.
Like I saw Hamilton last week. These things can go poorly. I think I would say that it strikes me as unlikely that the Seahawks and Packers have had no conversations about a DK Metcalf trade, because the Packers are a team that is potentially in the market for a wide receiver, and the Seahawks have a wide receiver. And teams just converse about a lot of things. That's the thing about teams. They're talking all the time.
I don't understand why are the Seahawks trying to trade DK Metcalf? If you assume that this...
Who said the Seahawks are trying to trade DK Metcalf?
Or it's just the Packers are having a conversation.
Who knows? I think John Schneider's answer about DK Metcalf at the Combine was somewhat interesting in its non-commitment, I would say, would be my assessment of what he had to say here.
What would be the argument? Is it basically just that he's going into his free agent, his last season, his free agent season, And the Seahawks are not going to want to pay him after that. They're not going to be capable of paying him after that.
I mean, here's what John Schneider said, and it's difficult to assess tone. This is one of those ones where we probably need Mike Sean Dugar to like give us the full context, much like the Mike McDonald quote we talked about with him last month when he was asked about the OC hire. And so he was evidently asked, where do things stand with Metcalf? And responded, where do things stand? I'm not sure. He's on our team. He's a big, strong, fast, physical receiver, which is not exactly like...
No, it's a fuck you response, though.
But he also could have said, we hope to sign him to a long-term contract extension, because obviously he knows, he's aware that DK wants an extension. That is a player who is in the realm of possibility to get extended. And he didn't say anything about that, and he did say things like that about Geno. So I may be parsing it too much there.
I think you're thinking too hard about this one.
I had the odds of DK being on the Seahawks next season at 80%, which is where Mike Sean had it, which is interesting. I still think they're around that ballpark.
It's a little hard. I mean, I guess we don't know what the package is, but right. I'm having a hard time believing that it is even a second round pick in compensation for DK Metcalf. If it's a first round pick, the deal is done.
Yes, I agree. Certainly, you look at what the 49ers got for Debo Samuel, a fifth round pick, and it is not an encouraging sign about the state of the wide receiver trade market, even though I think that DK Metcalf would have somewhat more trade value than Debo Samuel.
These are pretty different scenarios. It's interesting. They've played the same amount of years in the NFL. Debo has a lot more wear and tear, I think, on his body than DK has. You know, DK only played 15 games a season, but he's been 15 plus every single season of his career. He was close to 1,000 yards. You know, it was his least effective season in quite a while as a receiver. But at the same time, yeah, JSN had a monster season as well.
Well, and then as I noted on Discord, like Debo has only had one season as a pure receiver that has surpassed DK's disappointing season.
Yeah, I mean, Debo Samuel's just not that good of a wide receiver. Like, that's kind of what it boils down to. He's 29 years old. He's probably not getting any better. I guess he also played 15 games, which is kind of surprising. I would have guessed that it was less, but fell out of favor in their offense. He requested a trade, too.
Right.
DK Metcalf is wanting an extension. Debo Samuel wanted to leave because he saw that he wasn't necessarily a big part of their future plans and their offense currently. So I do think those things are a little bit different, but are they four rounds different? I don't know about that. And again, right. If it's a second round pick, it's kind of like, what are you? What are you, Seattle Seahawks? And this is a question that I think we've kind of asked ourselves a lot this offseason, which is, are they winning now? Are they a young team? What is the timeline? Like,
but I think there's a big difference between, like, look, if they trade Geno Smith, yes, I agree. In that scenario, they're rebuilding. You don't have to rebuild because you trade your number two wide receiver, even if he's a very good number two wide receiver.
It's not a rebuild, but their chances of making the playoffs decrease next year. And what is your timeline then? Who is your timeline? Who is the Seahawks timeline? Name a player. Is it Geno Smith? Is it Jackson Smith and Jibba?
I think John Schneider is the Seahawks timeline. I hate to break it to you.
What does that mean then?
I think he thinks he maybe... Yeah, well, I agree that is what makes a DK trade unlikely is that...
Yeah, if John Schneider's the timeline and he's like, I need to win now, why would you trade your star wide receiver for...
Well, because of the possibility that you may think that your star wide receiver is not as good as the rest of the world thinks.
I don't get that vibe from them, that's what it is. But again, Debo Samuel, like the Niners didn't have leverage in that trade. You know, they literally Debo went and found him and his agent went and found the deal.
Right. And Debo also, I think, is more of, he's a system fit. And I think it's a great, you know, I love the move for Washington. I think it makes a lot of sense to put him with Jaden Daniels. But DK,
if you're trading a fifth round pick, you take a flyer on Debo Samuel.
DK, the universe of teams that he could be a contributor for is much larger. So
I'm a little skeptical. I would be pretty upset if they traded DK. Because again, I'm kind of like, if we're trying to win, let's try to win. And let's just take a flyer and see what happens for DK for the season. You know, maybe he holds out of training camp, but he's going to play the games. He's going to be there by the time the games are happening. So let him play it out. There are options in place for something to do with a wide receiver who is in the position of DK Metcalf. If they want to, if he has a monster year and they want to franchise him, they franchise him. If they want to just take a comp pick, the comp pick would probably be pretty close to what they'd get in compensation from a trade.
Well, it's more complicated. I think people make that argument all the time. And number one,
they don't sign free agents.
They sometimes sign enough crappy free agents to offset their comp picks. I hate
but
to break it to you.
They control that at the very least.
But it's a limitation on what they can do. And last year, well, I certainly think it was the right strategy for them to amass the comp picks that they did. It like did force them. Like that's the reason they signed Jerome Baker, because he was waived instead. It didn't count as a comp pick. And then Jerome Baker turned out to not be a fit in Mike McDonald's system. So, I mean, not that that's like a one-to-one correlation, but like you're limiting your pool a little bit in free agency. But that's number one. And number two, number two is that the comp pick is at the end of the round by definition. So if you get traded a third round pick for DK Metcalf, that's different than getting a comp third round pick, because it's by definition better than any third round comp can be. And it might be a lot better depending on which team you trade for. And then number three, there's the time value of you get the pick a year earlier. And obviously the simplest thing an NFL team can do is just trade a pick now for a pick in the future in a higher round. And teams should do that every single year. But alas.
Until you have all the picks.
So a great, amazing Madden strategy. Now, my discussion thoughts on the Packers offer depend dramatically on who that young wide receiver is. As you know, I'm a believer in yards per target. Dontavion Wicks last season averaged 5.5 yards per target.
Holy
How
shit.
Is that even possible playing with
that
Jordan Love?
That is crazy.
He was their leader in targets, too. Romeo Doubs, 8.3. Jaden Reed, who presumably is not
I will
an option
not
in this.
Also, ignore that he was playing with Malik Willis for a chunk of that time as well.
Like, he played 17 games. It was not that big. Malik Willis could not have been responsible. Also, Malik Willis' stats were really good. So I guess a lot of that
was
running.
He throwing the ball downfield? I don't think so.
Not really. Christian Watson, 11.7 yards per target. Romeo Doubs, 8.3 yards per target. So suffice it to say, Dontavion Wicks is not the guy who would be targeting in this trade.
That is kind of bonkers. How many targets he had.
But if it's Romeo Doubs, I'd be low-key kind of excited about that.
I would be fine with that, depending on what the pick is. But if it's a fifth-round pick in Romeo Doubs, then...
Yeah, it'd have to be like a third or a fourth in Romeo Doubs. And now we can have a conversation. Now we can have a meeting to discuss that. So there we go. We'll know a lot more about the Seahawks by this time next week.
I don't feel good about it. I like right now basically the plan of more or less run it back, because I mean, again, if there's a receiver coming back, who knows? I'm very skeptical about all the Packers smoke right now. If there's a receiver coming back that you think is capable, I honestly guess I get it from the Packers perspective, you know, giving up a lower pick, but just run it back. Roll the dice. You have Geno Smith as your quarterback. That's the plan. That's the only plan, really. Unless they're going to tear it down, the only plan is build it this way.
I don't think it's the only plan, but it probably is the best plan. I will acknowledge that.
I don't know. I saw that and I'm not pleased with it as an idea. The other thing is Matthew Stafford is returning to the Rams. I think all the things that have happened across the NFC West, as far as personnel the last couple of years, I think generally in the short term haven't necessarily been good for the Seahawks. In the long term, I am happy about all these things. I'm happy about Matthew Stafford returning to the Rams for another season. I think whatever they were going to be compensated from the Giants, say, was going to be too much for Matthew Stafford. Like, the Rams were going to have won that trade. And I was not looking forward to that. Anytime that you're paying a draft pick for the privilege of paying a player, and especially a player who's, what is he, 37 years old, Matthew Stafford? Something like that. I assume it would have been a first-round pick, or it would have been very good draft capital that they were getting for Matthew Stafford in that one. That would have been an ability for the Rams to have retooled. And right now, I look at this Rams team, and I'm like, this is not... Puka Nacua is their timeline, for what it's worth.
Wow. Can I share something? I'm looking up Matthew Stafford on Over the Cap, and I went to go search Matthew Stafford, and nothing came up. Do you know why?
Because it's Matt.
They have him as Matt.
That's
He is
Stafford.
37.
30. So if you're in the position, I haven't seen it work out too often that a team has traded for a 37-year-old
God, his cap number
quarterback.
is 49.7 million. That's a lot of money.
Is it? That's not a lot of money, though.
I mean, it's not a small amount of money.
People consider Matthew Stafford to be very good.
I agree. Yeah,
I
that people
personally think
consider him
he's
that way.
about the same as Geno Smith.
I mean, they wouldn't have saved very much cap money because it would have been basically none, but it would have been a huge amount of 2026 cap they would have had to play with in addition to whatever they got.
And then the other piece
So.
is the Debo Samuel trade. I do think it makes the Niners worse in a way that I don't think Debo Samuel's necessarily like I don't think he's as good of a receiver as DK Metcalf. I do think in the short term that it does make the Niners worse, though. I mean, Juwan Jennings ended up being a very good receiver last year. Like the Niners can replace him, but some of the stuff that they did with Debo was still frustrating to deal with, especially to Pete Carroll. Overall, Pete Carroll's defenses, and it takes away a little bit of their flexibility by not having him there. And it's not like, they get the fifth round pick, but it's basically just getting his money off the cap is what happened.
And taking a huge accelerated hit this year. So that's really more of a long-term move for them from that standpoint.
And if I'm Brock Purdy, I basically ask for more or less the highest quarterback deal in the league, you know?
I mean, that's got to be your starting point. Yeah, I don't know if that's my like walk away point, but that's where
I
I'd
think
start.
Brock Purdy has basically all of the leverage in the world right now going into those negotiations. And there's a reality that Brock Purdy is probably not the best quarterback in the league, but if he's being paid even top five, that is a good thing for the Seahawks that the Niners are having to make decisions like this. Like Debo Samuel's an easy decision to make, but they do get harder after that when you all of a sudden go from having an extraordinarily cheap quarterback to an extraordinarily expensive quarterback. So I think all of the things around the division are lining up fairly nicely for the Seahawks to just keep going. Keep going with what they're doing. I look at it and I'm like, if your other option is, let's say that you're the Giants and you're having to trade plus pay a massive cap number to Matthew Stafford, like that is not a good place to be in. And if you're the Rams and you have Matthew Stafford who's 37 and, maybe he's a good quarterback, maybe not, but if your roster is basically built around Jared Verse and Puka Nacua, I think the Seahawks can beat that team long term. It is less scary to me overall. So I do think the Niners schedule is the big outlier. Like that's the thing next season that we should be the most concerned with is the
Yes.
schedule that the Niners are playing. But if Debo makes them even slightly worse, that is a positive because I don't think, the draft pick's not going to matter that much and the cap's not going to matter that much. So
Okay.
I think things are lining up fairly nicely for the Seahawks to just run it back.
Well, maybe they will have largely run it back by this time next week.
Will we know that?
If they extend Geno, that we will. I
Okay.
don't think that's going to happen in the next week, but it could.
If they don't trade, like the DK Metcalf thing is going to linger for a while, at least until after the draft.
Probably, yes.
So I don't think we'll necessarily know all these things, but go draft some players, fill some holes, run it back. See what happens in the NFC West.
Niners have the sixth best Super Bowl odds, so Vegas does seem to believe in them.
Oh, Vegas knows. You knew the second that the season ended, Vegas was like they were licking their lips at that over-under for the following season. In the same way that
Which has
we
not even
all
been
knew.
released yet.
Yeah, but we know. We know it's
We
going to be
do
like
know, yes.
10 and a half, 11 and a half. It's going to be a very high for a team that were they third or fourth? They have a fourth place schedule.
They were fourth. Arizona
Yeah.
was obviously better than them.
Yeah, Vegas knows. But the Rams trying to run it back for a team that, what did they finish? 10-7? They had the identical record as the Seahawks. Obviously, they weren't trying in the last game, but I'm like, it was not, they had a negative point differential, right?
Yeah, but I
Yeah.
don't know if you're aware of this. They beat Minnesota in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah,
So
woo! Oh, yeah.
we saw how well that worked for the Giants.
I mean, they had a negative 19 point differential. So I'm like, you want to re-up Matt Stafford? Have fun, Rams.
Matthew.
And
On
on that note,
that
thanks for
note,
listening.
thanks. So it's not just athletes. Because I saw the reverse of this with I was watching some highlights of an old Graham Norton show on Netflix. My wife was, if we're being honest. And they were talking about Julia Roberts being a soccer fan because she was into Man U. And it was like, she's such a big soccer fan. She knows that it's called Old Trafford.
Wow.
No, she actually seemed like a legitimate soccer fan, but
But the threshold is way lower.
so low. I mean, especially for like English people, because it's a, it's an English show. English people thinking about Americans knowing anything about soccer, they're like, you know, the ball is round? Like, wow, what a diehard fan.
I've just been, there's been so much shit rattling around in my head of like thoughts, I guess they're called.
Oh, no.
But no, if people like thinking something or expressing something that I'm basically just like, yeah, that's not true or whatever, or like this requires so much more information to it. And like, so as a
So
designer,
you're basically doing a, sir, there is someone wrong on the internet.
but it's not that there's someone wrong on the internet, it's that there's everyone wrong on the internet.
Oh, well,
Sir,
that
there's someone
seems
wrong.
accurate. I don't know, it's also not sir. I somehow confused that, conflated that with sir, this is a Wendy's.
Sir, this is a Wendy's. I like it. What is the there's someone wrong on the internet?
It's like the, why are you awake right now or something? And it's like, there's someone wrong on
There's
the
someone
internet.
wrong.
I mean, never has there been a more, my whole career is there's someone
That's
wrong on
actually
the
so
internet.
funny. but just like people's like cognitive errors that they make or whatever. Like we were going to the Tyler the Creator show and Luke was like talking. He was like, oh, that person's really gonna like it. He was like, when they hear this song, they're really gonna freak out. And I was like, they're not. I was like, Luca, this is pop music that you're listening to. I was like, I'm sorry, but this isn't subversive. Like you're talking about an artist who sold out two nights at Climate Pledge Arena. Like if you're trying to define yourself by the fandom of this and how aggressive it is, maybe rethink it because ultimately it's music for middle school kids. Do you understand what I'm saying? Where he's like, oh, when that person hears that song, they're gonna freak out. And I was like,
Like
they're
in the
just
crowd?
yeah. Well, there were people going to the show, like old white people going to the show, and he was like, oh man, that person's gonna lose it. And I was like, first off, they're not gonna listen that closely to the lyrics and be like, well, I never. You know, like the pearl clutching that's going to happen in the crowd at the Tyler the Creator show
Well,
is
it's
going
also people that like
to be.
purchased tickets to the God Tyler the Creator
Well,
show
there are
or
people who,
accepted free
like,
tickets.
yeah, got tickets
But
because.
I'm saying it's not exactly like Kendrick Lamar performing at halftime of the Super Bowl. Like
I
it's
mean,
not like
yes.
I've just tuned in for a football game and what? There's rap on my television?
Even then, I do think that the backlash is overstated. People love
Obviously.
to define themselves as being against a backlash, whether real or perceived or
Yes,
whatever.
I mean the
And so
backlash
Luca
to
was
the
like
backlash is usually greater than any actual backlash.
trying to like define himself by he's like cool with this stuff, but these old white people won't be. And I'm like, you're in seventh grade, dude. Like, I'm sorry. I also was
What were you doing that with when you were in seventh grade? I guess you weren't going to any concerts.
I mean, I got the Marshall Mathers LP in, I was older than seventh grade. It was 1999,
I
I
mean,
think.
you were even older than seventh grade when you got Big Willie style
Yes, I was in ninth grade
to get into Let's
then.
Remember Some Years.
But like, I do remember the Marshall Mathers LP, Marshall Mathers LP scaring me the first time, just being like, oh shit. It is fun, like, thinking back on moments. That's why we were talking about this weekend, whereas like things that scared you growing up. And Luca was like, oh yeah, like rap music probably scared you. And I was like, Luca, rap music was the norm. Like that was the base thing to listen to. Rap
I don't know if
music
I'd go
didn't scare
that
me.
far, but yes.
Soundgarden scared me.
Don't think any music scared me.
Okay, we were talking about going to
I'm still pretty scared of snakes. That one's held on. I just watched The White Lotus and a
I
lot of
remember
snakes.
Big John Nizzle. I went to his house when we were kids, and he had like a Nirvana sticker on his bed, and I was like, I was like, demon worship. And so it was just funny where Luca thinks that, like, again, like trying to understand what is subversive or whatever. And I'm like, the thing that you think that I was listening to or whatever. Well, he's smart enough to know. He's not like he understands that I was listening to Dr. Dre or whatever in
Yeah,
1993.
he's talked to you before. He's heard you
But
play your old CDs in the car
like
repeatedly.
the thing that the base thing that culture tells you is going to be the scary thing sometimes isn't the scary thing or whatever. And that's always like it's been a thing that's bothered me. Does that make sense? What I'm saying? Where he was like, yeah, rap music must have really scared you. And I was like, no. I'm like, Alice in Chains, that shit was terrifying in 1993. But also, the other thing that
I
was.
cannot put myself in the mindset. Maybe I'm not old
Let
enough
me
yet, which is weird
tell you.
because I'm an old man, but I can't put myself in the mindset of being scared by music. Like, annoyed,
You don't
confused.
remember that? You
No.
never felt that when you were a kid? I think it's because you weren't paying enough attention and I was paying a little. I had my eye open to it. You had blinders on. You had market level awareness, as
You
we
had your
say.
third eye open. Again, I just like it's, I mean, okay, horror film music, I will admit, that does scare me. But I don't
You're
think that's
scared of
what we're
so many
talking about.
things, and then you're acting like, see, this is the same thing that I'm talking
But
about,
I'm
where
not
you're.
act scared of culture that is different than
I'm not
mine.
talking about now. I'm talking about when you were like 7 years old.
I don't think I was then either.
It's because you weren't paying enough attention. Okay, so here are the two examples that we gave. Or this was one example because the other one still is too unsettling, but it's not about culture. It's just a house that I never want to think about. but because we were doing the Carcino family tour of Boulevard Park
As
and
one
the
does.
greater Duwamish area, it's my favorite thing to do. To be like, that's a house that our family owned. That's a house that our family owned. That's a property that our family owned. That's where homeless Ryan Reynolds lived. Like all of these things. You know, the cast of characters in the greater Boulevard Park Duwamish area. But the house on Queen Anne, I remember going there. I think this was just me, not you, probably 1993 or so. And there were people who were living the singles lifestyle, right? They were like hypothetically, maybe yuppies. Grunge or whatever, who rented that house. And I remember walking in there and it smelled weird to me. I don't think it was like even weed smoke or whatever. I think it's just old houses smell weird. And they had crazy stuff in the house. And one of those crazy things was an Best of Elvis Costello CD. But I'm
I can't
telling
get
you,
inside your brain.
when you're in 1993, people living lifestyles so differently than our like mostly sheltered suburban lifestyle. And so again, Dr. Dre didn't scare me. Elvis Costello scared me in 1993.
We're not topping that, so let's go out on that note.
Okay. I have so many more thoughts on this. I'm like
That's part of what I feared. That I fear. Your thoughts. That I'm scared of.
good tonic.